Good morning. Today is Thursday, June the 2nd, 2016. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners County Administration Workshop. It's 9 a.m. And we have with us the full Board of Commissioners this morning. We have Julie Schmelzer, our new Community Development and Planning Director. And we have James Black from Planning and Legal Counsel and Assistant Person. I think she knows your names. Have to do that for the record. So, all right. First on the agenda, we have legal counsel, resolution number 2016, unassigned numbers yet, in the matter of authorizing the Josephine County Planning Director to initiate a land use application to end the land use development code.
Yes.
Regarding marijuana. So.
Okay. Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
So this is the result of separate requests from separate commissioners that came in right around the same time. One commissioner had asked regarding getting the process and planning starting for setbacks within rural residential, and another commissioner asked about fence height requirements, also regarding rural residential. And then it occurred to me that during the course of those discussions, be it within the Board of Commissioners or in the Planning Commission or within the public, there could be, in fact, other topics as yet to be known about or identified or brought up. And rather than go through all the formality again every time any topic surrounding the production of marijuana in rural residential zones comes up, which would probably involve another resolution and another application on the part of the planning director, I added some language. Working with Mr. Black, we added some language that it shall include but not be limited to setback and fence height requirements. Of course, ultimately, the Board of County Commissioners is going to decide if you want to make any changes to the Rural Land Development Code. But this at least provides some latitude to the planning department and the commission along the way to talk about the subject in broader terms. And again, not overly broad. This is just talking about rural residential zones, production in rural residential zones.
So this is my request had been in regards to the setbacks, trying to mitigate some of the issues in regards to people planting marijuana right up to somebody else's property line, which has been an issue in rural residential areas. And in Josephine County, in rural residential areas, they can have agricultural production. So the state has declared marijuana agricultural production. So this is where we kind of get into a little bit of a conflict here. But as to the fence heights, the fence heights are set by state. They require, I believe, an 8-foot fence for recreational marijuana. So I guess there may be some other things. Pardon? Well, we're just talking about the recreational in our ordinance right now, because we aren't talking about regulating medical. Aren't we just talking about, that's what I understood? Or did I misunderstand?
No, it just doesn't make a distinction.
Because under the time, place, and manner, measure 91 is what I was always referring to. But anyway, this is just directing planning department to come up with a proposal, is that right?
Recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
To initiate an application, in fact. They wouldn't be coming up with the recommendation.
Right, we would just initiate the application process. You do need to have some input, because we do need to have a staff report drafted to give the Planning Commission some ideas and thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe those ideas would be good coming from the board.
Mm-hmm.
You had your ideas.
Yeah.
And I know you're having some workshops.
Yes, we're having scheduled 4 of them over the month of June.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one actually is coming up in about a week.
Mm-hmm.
In Williams. So I've talked to some growers already, and most of them have no objection to a setback. Most of them want to be good neighbors, but there are, of course, those who are not being good neighbors. So when we have a level playing field where everybody knows the same thing and can work from there, that's kind of what we're looking for is some kind of document that we can point to say everybody has to go by these rules. And you know, we know that marijuana is an agricultural crop and it can be grown in our rural residential zones, but we also need to accommodate other people in this. So.
A question for legal counsel. Being that this is all this developing situation, is the use of marijuana, cannabis, Are those co-mingling possibilities? Or if we say marijuana, does that indicate some particular product crop? If we say cannabis, does that include everything? Or is that, in other words, there's a, people want it, it's cannabis. It's not marijuana, it's cannabis. They want to change the name, or, you know, I don't have a problem with changing the name, that kind of thing. But I'm just curious, because here we have, considering the impact of marijuana production, is that considering the impact of cannabis production? I don't know if that has anything to do with it. It's just, I'm trying to figure out the adjusting to the new terminology of life.
Okay. I mean, so for purposes of your resolution here, I think that the department and the commission and the board have latitude to discuss marijuana and cannabis without any constraint. I wouldn't say that there's a definitional limitation. If you wanted to start talking about cannabis, when the resolution says marijuana, I can make a change in there if you'd like to include the word cannabis if the board wants that.
I mean, I don't know. If it's just simply the process where in 10 years the word marijuana is not even going to be known, it'll all be cannabis or whatever. I just don't know.
I'm going to declare a potential conflict of interest. I'm a stockholder in a hemp company, and I also have a marijuana grow license. There is a difference, because marijuana and hemp are both cannabis. Hemp is not marijuana. And the distinction has to do with the level of THC. The international standard is 3%. And so when you're talking about cannabis, that could include hemp. And that's why you see in all the statutory definitions, they'll talk about marijuana or they'll say cannabis, not including hemp.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about cannabis, you're talking about a scientific designation of a plant group. So the way the state statutes have been written, they talk about Measure 91 as being marijuana. It's a marijuana statute because that deals with anything with more than 3% THC.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the statutes that deal with hemp. But if you take cannabis, then you have to keep delineating does not include hemp. You know, so if you talk about marijuana, then you're talking about anything with more than 3% THC. So there is a distinction. In Measure 91, the language was marijuana.
Yes. And it ties to an existing definition within Chapter 475, I think, of marijuana, which is quite specific in regards to what genus and probably species we're talking about. Even we're way out of my depth in terms of botany there, but I would say, it is quite limited in terms of what is illegal, what kind of marijuana is illegal in terms of the species. I think it's Morrissey, cannabis sativa. These things, I probably should stop talking, but anyway, there's different versions of marijuana. Some of them actually aren't illegal if you want to get very technical about it. And so that's why the lab in criminal prosecutions runs certain tests to find out what genus we're talking about here. If it's, in any event, for purposes of your resolution, I wouldn't be concerned that you're limiting anybody in terms of definition.
That was sort of my only concern.
Okay.
Okay. Did you get your question answered? Commissioner Hare?
Yes.
Okay.
The third whereas for me needs to have a change. So the board has determined that it is in the best interest of the citizens of Josephine County to provide for regulation of marijuana production in rural residential zones in the county. I think what we're looking for, paralleling the industrial zone look at, is not, I would put in provide for a review and potential proposed regulation.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I know there's
okay.
a conflict. I don't know that we're going to be able to regulate a solution that makes sense. I can see these, we can go down this path, and we're not a guarantee that there's going to be a regulation to approve by the board at the end. That would be my suggested change.
Perhaps in the best interest to examine options regarding
right.
regulation? Okay.
Something along those lines. So that we're just exploring this. I really like how it's fairly broadly written as opposed to the last one's first draft that had a real specific element of growing it within a building. I don't want to limit this like the last paragraph is got that, but the second to last, but not to be limited to. Setbacks is something that I've kind of proposed as a relative thing to the camp that we explored that zoning element. 2 years ago when we approved that the comp plan in the zone change for that additional use of a day camp, having a 250-foot setback on any camp-related types of activities, not including the parking lot, obviously. But even if you have a campfire, that element had to be 250 in the zone, in the plan. And that is what I was suggesting we kind of emulate. Not a building setback, that's 10 feet. And they can be, it varies. The city's got a different setback for infrastructure than the county. And I imagine Jackson County is different than Josephine County's as well. That's a county by county kind of a thing that I think we could kind of emulate that makes a lot of sense. The problem is that if you find yourself at the 250-foot level of a setback and your R5 zone, it doesn't have 250 feet or 500 feet wide. They have them that are, R5, yeah. And it's an acre. And you may not have that kind of potential setback. I think we need to explore whether or not, well, then you don't find yourself in a capacity that makes you a good neighbor and enables you to have a grow of 96 plants on an acre of land in a rural residential area. You just don't have the setback requirements. And they limit that for buildings. If you wanted to build a building on a city lot and you have a 20-25-foot setback, you're limited in the size of the footprint of the building you can put. So it wouldn't be unheard of to have that kind of a restriction. That you need at least 3 acres or something in order to have 48 plants, in a rural residential area. That might come out in the wash. I don't know.
But this year, as I'm talking about setbacks, I was talking about the possibility to have setbacks.
Mm-hmm. Possibility.
Yeah.
You're looking at
options. What we're talking about is possibility and potentials here.
Yeah, I mean, you're mentioning 250 feet and all that kind of stuff. And I mean,
that was an example of one we had last year, that the camp, 2 years ago, kids camp.
Right. Okay. It's in the RLDC. Mm-hmm. I would rather not invent the wheel on some sort of a special kind of a code for this. Mm-hmm. We take a code that exists for some sort of other type of challenge in the that's what the RLDC is for, is to try to mitigate challenges between neighborhoods and neighbors. That's where I would go, mm-hmm. The low-hanging fruit to figure it out, figure out a solution.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this proposal, this particular resolution, is for the purpose of directing the planning director to work on getting those mm-hmm. issues together mm-hmm. and input, public input. Okay.
And the planning director had a mm-hmm. question.
Yeah, yes. I just have a couple questions if I can.
Yes, you can.
I came across a document that said the Board of Commissioners had determined that the growing of marijuana was being treated the same as a farm crop.
Yes.
And I saw that come out of the state as well. Do we have other setbacks for other farm crops?
Not that I know of.
Something you never look into, but probably.
And do we have some place in Manna for medical marijuana right now?
No.
Okay. There's a really good chance we go through this exercise because of the first question. We find ourselves not able to mm-hmm. initiate mm-hmm. any kind of a setback requirement because what we do for marijuana, you're going to have to do for cannabis, so hemp production on RR5. Or tomatoes, mm-hmm. or strawberries. And there's, who's going to go out and regulate that strawberry farmer on Redwood right outside the city limits, that you need a 250-foot setback on your R5. He isn't zoned R5 there, but the example, sure. got to be true. I'm not going to regulate somebody's strawberries.
It's
on the fence line.
It's ag business, not specific what kind of ag is wrong. So.
One difference, however, is the legislature has authorized us to regulate time, place, and manner, which they haven't done that to tomatoes or strawberries. So we have that gem, if you want to call it that, in the state statute, I think statute
well,
I know and the rules.
It is uh-huh. about the strawberry fence, next to the strawberry patch, or
yeah, they reach to the fence and pick them.
Any cherry grow or pear, something like that. It's not a problem.
No.
This is the problem.
Yeah.
For a lot of people who even are supporters. I've heard from people who are, supporters of the concept. Just, is it appropriate to have 96 or 48 plants right next door to your bedroom window, or I don't know, something to explore.
Yeah. But that is what our planning department is going to explore today. Okay, any other question or comment on that item?
No.
All right, then.
We have allowed you to be the one who's scared.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here.
Well, I think it's a really important distinction that Commissioner Heck just makes. You're operating under the direction of the Board of Commissioners. Mm-hmm. There's no skewering of the planning department for going through this exercise. It's legal. That's what you want to do. I'm just kidding. It's the board. Yeah.
Why not?
You know, asking for this exercise. It may be one that we just found out. And for a lot of people who call and complain, you need to do something about this. This is doing something about it. Even if we go through the exercise and find ourselves having no real resolve here, we at least went through it. Right now, I can't tell people one way or the other. I just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And until we do that...
Mm-hmm. That's the role of the board. That's why we explore these options. So we have some experts on it, so... as expert as you get in the state of Oregon on this issue. Thank you.
Welcome, welcome.
All right. Department business, we have... yes.
So let me advance the matter to the business session.
Yes.
With the changes.
Yes.
With the changes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't
I'll
see
make
that.
The edits and...
Yes. Move it forward.
To admin?
Yes.
And we will
stick
to it.
I can.
Okay.
We don't want to make planning have to come over for that. Okay. Department business, HR.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good to see you.
Have a good day. Good day. Say that like Australian. Good day.
Good day.
Good day.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What I have for you today is a draft and a policy revision. The Budget Committee made a recommendation to draft a policy that would allow the elected officials' compensation to be kept within 5%. Ultimately, they don't have the authority to adopt a policy, but they just made a recommendation. The policy has to be adopted by the Board of Commissioners. Even with this policy in place, you're still legally obligated to go through the Elected Official Compensation Committee and the Budget Committee to authorize changes. But this would put a process in place to somewhat depoliticize that process. We already have a policy in place for elected official compensation. This is just an addition to that policy.
I read it. Looks to codify, I think, the Elected Officials Compensation Committee's recommendation. Received a 5-1 support vote from the committee in favor of it.
On 1.4, because these rules and regulations apply to all E of Josephine County. If somebody didn't have any idea what we're looking at, what that's E is elected, I'm assuming.
Last sentence
last
in
sentence.
Section 1.
Are we talking about the part that was changed? I'm not sure.
No.
Because these rules and regulations apply to all E, capital E, of Josephine County who occupy elected positions. Or is this more section 2?
The last section of the 1.4.
Under 1.4, the very last sentence before it says section 2, insurance benefits.
These rules apply to all.
You reference somewhere else as a placeholder for
I don't know. That's strange. That should. I don't know why it isn't. It should be all.
I was assuming
all,
it was elected.
Yeah.
But yeah, it should be delineated down.
I think you take the E out.
Yeah.
These rules and regulations apply to.
I think it's just a typo.
I think it's a typo. That's what it looks like as a typo.
Just be counting something. Employees.
Personnel.
Personnel.
I'll change that to personnel.
Okay.
And if you want to move it forward, I'll have a order drafted with this attached to it.
And then, of course, it's down on the next page below that in regards to the annual review by the Elected Officials Compensation Committee.
And what was the question on? I missed it.
No, I was just commenting that the last paragraph down there talks about the Elected Officials Compensation Committee, the annual review, so that's in there.
Okay.
You guys in favor or not? Or?
Well, I was making sure you had a chance to read through it.
Okay.
Okay. So you don't have any you don't have any comment?
No.
Okay.
Twice higher to move forward.
So you both want to move it forward?
Yep.
Okay. We can move this forward to the admin.
All right. I'll have the order drafted and I'll extend it for next Wednesday.
Okay.
And part two, this is coming when?
The following Thursday. So next Thursday. So next Wednesday, the board will vote to approve the order to adopt this policy change. The next day is Thursday, and I'll have the actual changes that the budget committee recommended on that.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you were chair of the budget committee. Would you like to speak to it?
Sure.
Okay. The chair of the budget committee.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Public Works. Order number 2016, a reconstruction of the intersection at Hugo Road and Three Pines, and approving temporary closure. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. So what we're asking for on this one is a temporary closure for the reconstruction of Hugo Road, Three Pines Road intersection to minimize public inconvenience and expense. So a road closure to minimize public inconvenience doesn't really...
Yeah, right.
But that's the case, and that's what we're asking for. This is located in Hugo, which, if you're familiar with the area, it's if you take I-5 exit 66. Is that right?
I think so.
North
of
Hugo exit.
The Hugo exit. It's about a mile and a half west of the Hugo exit on I-5. And the reason we need a road closure is we have a vertical grade difference of about 3 feet. We need to cut Three Pines Road down to match the grades. That's one of our constraints. The other constraint is we have a power pole that has power and telephone utilities on it, and it needs to be moved, and where it needs to be moved is into the future travel lane. And how do I explain this? So it's going to put it in a travel lane for... Right now it's located in the future travel lane, and if we need to relocate it, we need to relocate it to the existing travel lane. That's its future position. So either way, it's going to be in a travel lane, so the pole's in the way. So that's the second constraint. And then the third constraint is we have narrow right-of-way, and we just don't have the staging areas to get around the construction.
When you're changing the road grade, the alternative to leaving one road, one lane open is almost impossible to have a road at two different grades.
Right, to cars to traverse through the area.
That would really be complicated.
So what is the alternative route?
Jump it?
There are alternative routes, and I included a map.
Four miles
is the maximum amount of direction if you want to go. If you were at one house and you want to go to your neighbor's house across the closure, but most people don't actually go that route. They'll just go a different route. So the average, I think it was 2.3 miles. And we drove one of the roads, Oxyoke. It took us about 3 minutes to drive it. So the alternative is either 20-minute delays to try to keep it open through flagger control or a 3-minute out-of-direction detour. So the closure is not the inconvenience, it's the constructions that's actually the inconvenience.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody out there would disagree that this is a needed project.
Yeah.
It is a safety concern out there.
Well, and closing the road enables you to do the construction. quicker.
Yes.
If you had to split that road and do half grade, you know, one day and half grade, you know, that's going to take a lot longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's taking two steps forward and one step back.
Exactly.
To get the construction down.
The construction would be over, started and over quicker than. Okay.
The other question I had was on the now, therefore, it's ordered, number one, and it's got on the closure. You've got Hugo Road, County Road, et cetera, and it's close to all vehicular and pedestrian traffic. I'm not sure why pedestrian traffic would have to be included in it, because a lot of people that walk up that road.
But if we have backhoes and dozers moving.
Well, I understand that, but, I mean, I also give people common sense that they've got enough brains to move off to the side of the road. I just don't. I mean, my two cents is it just seems a little excessive to close it off to pedestrians.
There might not be a road for them to walk on. Right. That's the thing. It's really more of a big moving of material.
I bet you those people have walked on many more trails around that road than you and I could ever imagine.
There's no way we're allowing pedestrians to go
in
through
a construction zone.
Construction
I'm not saying going through it.
But we don't have the thoroughfare to establish it's the right of way. We need the entire right-of-way, our jurisdiction, what people choose to do outside of that is up to them. But our portion of the road, construction, we need the whole thing, the whole time.
And that's language that carries over from, like, bridge road closures or culvert road closures, where sometimes it's physically impossible to even walk through. Mm-hmm. And we don't have pedestrian facilities, so we left that language in. We'd have to provide pedestrian facilities.
We don't have sidewalks.
Yeah. Correct. Or road. Like on a rural road, you use the road shoulder as a pedestrian facility, mm-hmm. and we're going to obliterate the road shoulder during construction. So that's why we have it closed to pedestrians.
And this is for about 4 weeks.
We're hoping less.
To do less. That's always the hope.
Well, one of the things I do appreciate
and
is
frequently
that
you do get less.
When you put these out there, you'll say this is four-week period of time. The anticipation is it's going to take you 2.5 to do it, but you want to say this is going to be 4 in case of that situation. And I appreciate that. I'd much rather have the whole nasty shot rather than, oh, it's going to take 2.5 weeks, and then, another week off, and then that's really nasty. So.
I went through one of those, and hopefully I never do that again.
Okay.
One of the problems with a lot of these is that we're getting in and we're trying to, you know, repair a culvert like we've done in the past and find out that you really can't repair it, you're going to have to take it out completely. That takes it, you know, you're going to use the whole 4 weeks or whatever, but this is very simple. There should be nothing complicated about it.
We do have utility relocations, and those are done by others, so those are some things.
Dependent on their schedule.
Dependent on their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to mention we did meet with Tim, and I can't pronounce his last name, Krush. He owns the Hugo Hitching Post out there. It's a market.
Okay.
He's concerned about the impacts to his business out there.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't disagree with the project, but he's concerned the closure is going to affect his business. But, I mean, that's the fact of life of construction. I think more of the construction is going to impact his business, not necessarily the closure. So I will let him know about the next Wednesday's meeting if he wants to make comment.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I think you outlined, you know, the relocating of utilities is key so that they're all keyed in with when this is going to occur and double-check, triple-check to make sure that they've got it in their schedule. The last thing you want to do is rip up the road and be waiting on the utility company to say, we don't have that in the queue for 2 weeks, mm-hmm. so that'll be a problem.
Okay.
Okay.
Stuff happens, so.
Shall we move this forward?
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. And would you address it, Commissioner Hare?
Sure.
That way you folks don't have to come to the meeting.
All right.
Appreciate that.
Commissioner Hare will take care of it.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Department Quarterly Update. We have Community Corrections today.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me. I brought some visual aids for you. I also sent it electronically as well yesterday.
Mm-hmm. I thought, but I didn't print it out.
Okay. So tried to keep it to one page. I realize there's a whole lot of numbers on there, so I'll go through and explain some of this just briefly. The top table is the most recent snapshot that we have of our community corrections outcomes. And if you look at that first column of employment and treatment and restitution and community service, this measures the worst of the worst that we have on supervision. It is the high risk and it's the medium risk folks that that this outcome is measuring. And if you look on that first column, employment, we're getting our worst clientele jobs at a rate of about 43%, which is better than the state average by a couple of points. Treatment, similarly, we have folks that are high risk and medium risk in treatment at about 1 out of 3, which again is better than the state average.
By quite a substantial number.
Yeah, and I think that is attributed to our in-house treatment that we offer, and I'll go over some of those referrals later. The restitution collection that we have, and this is just a snapshot of the folks that have been closed within a six-month period, and we're collecting restitution at nearly double the rate that the statewide average is doing. Community service, again, we're exceeding the state average. And positive case closures for post-prison and probation, we're exceeding those state averages as well. Now, we get to the recidivism, and we're not exceeding the state average there. In fact, we're several points worse. And keep in mind that these are the folks that are high risk and medium risk. This is not including the low risk clientele for recidivism. So if you
apples
look,
and apples as far as the state statistics is concerned.
It is. Yeah. It's apples to apples for the state. We in Josephine County, we operate a little bit differently on some of the low-risk folks. We're identifying them initially. We're putting them into a reduced supervision unit, and we're not monitoring them nearly as close as we are with the high-risk and medium-risk clientele. We're deploying the vast majority of our resources into the high-risk and medium-risk people. So all the contacts that we do for field contacts, all the home visits, the collateral contacts, all of these investigatory types of contacts that we're doing, those are deployed on the high-risk and medium-risk people. Thereby, probably, we're going to have an increase in recidivism on those people because they're getting the most attention. So I'm not too concerned about that particular outcome measure at this point. I did want to bring your attention to the recidivism report that we get from the state, and this hasn't been updated since November, and it may need clarification on what exactly this measures. As you can see in the far left corner, these are all cohorts. So these are people that are grouped within six-month periods, all right, parole and probation. We follow those cohorts throughout the next 3 years. So obviously, 3 years hasn't passed from November of 2015, because that put us into November 2018. So there's blanks on your two-year gap and your three-year gap, both for parole and for probation. But you can see a downward trend if you look at the probation side on the far right corner, the 36 months track. You can see a downward trend, and this is for Josephine County in probation, 29.8% or 29.8 recidivated, and that is going down to 20.7. So that's incorporating the low-risk population into what you see on the high risk and the medium risk people. Okay, so we're still going down in terms of recidivism.
Is that cyclical, or is there a trend specific based on some sort of program, or does it just fluctuate depending on the clients that you're treating?
There's all kinds of factors. Okay. I mean, the law enforcement factor in terms of police going out there and doing investigations, the prosecution.
I would say that, you know, if you have fewer people out there potentially able to collect people, even if that, you know, you have to have somebody collect somebody after a felony or whatever is being committed, if they're not being caught,
the crimes are still happening.
But you don't have the staff to back up
Right. There's all kinds of factors that go into this recidivism report. But
you could look really good if you had nobody out there collecting anybody. You didn't have to go to a different county to commit a felony and get captured, and then it would, you know,
yeah,
we could look stellar if we had it.
Right. If we didn't have any of these programs that were in the green,
mm-hmm.
then we couldn't attribute any of those numbers to the recidivism rate. However, we do have these programs currently in place, and we're making referrals to employment, treatment, restitution programs, and community service and all the like. And I think that has an impact on overall recidivism for the future. So,
in that these are supposed to be apples to apples, as I hear you use that phrase. What are some of the reasons why we're at 47.2 and the state is at 40.3?
So I'll go over some of those reasons now with the POs, field services, and the contacts that we have. We have a significant amount of contacts with our clientele. There's some folks around the state that don't do near as much field services that we do. We're out in the community all the time. We're doing home visits. We're doing searches on folks' property, their person. And we're taking those to the next level in terms of making sure that they get prosecuted. And if they don't get prosecuted for a new crime, we're sanctioning them. And we're taking action on a lot of those cases. And a lot of them are from our home visits. We're also partnering with RAID for parole and probation. And just last month we had an investigation that got 1 pound of heroin and 1 pound of meth off of the I-5 corridor. And that was from some of the efforts that we make out there. A lot of the other community corrections agencies across the state, they're not necessarily involved with functions like RAID, but we are. And we recognize that we need to be out there and be proactive and so on and so forth, because we don't have the police presence out in the rural areas that most counties do. So that's one of the reasons, I think, that may increase our recidivism rate on our clientele.
It also means that a higher risk for your officers that are going out and doing these kinds of supervision work on these folks, too, because you're out there by yourself or two of you.
Oftentimes. Some of the other contacts that we're making, if you look down the list, we had officer face-to-face contacts. And these aren't just contacts, hey, how you doing? These are contacts that are intentional on finding out what it is that these criminogenic factors are within these people's lives. You know, who they're hanging out with, their companions. And then we figure out if they're hanging out with antisocial companions, well, then we do something about that. We case plan and so on and so forth. And so these are very intentional types of office visits. We're only doing this with 13 POs right now. We're looking at recruiting for another PO. Thank you for adopting that budget this year, because that is including an additional PO. So we'll be up to 14. I got POs that are carrying roughly 90 folks on their caseload right now in the general geographic area, which is very difficult to supervise. Mm-hmm. So that additional PO will help. Thank you for approving that. The work crew, if you go down to the work crew numbers, we had roughly 14 workers per day, which if you add that all up for the quarter, we had 979 cumulative daily worker count. If you equate that number to jail beds, that's about $82,000 if those guys were put into the jail. So we really saved $82,000 minus the cost of our work crews. Similarly, with the home detention, we had 893 total home detention days with 106 people that we served on home detention. Those guys would otherwise be spending that in jail. So roughly we saved $75,000 there as a system. Outpatient treatment, this is just our in-house outpatient treatment. There's 80 folks at the time that I did the snapshot, I think it was just at the end of May. that are currently enrolled in our cognitive behavioral therapy. We had 59 new enrollments within the quarter. 12 of them were discharged unsuccessfully. Typically, we give them about 3 shots. If they have dirty UAs, they're continuing to relapse. They're demonstrating thinking errors that are manipulative, or they're not showing up to groups. Then we'll typically terminate them. We had 12 of those people. Successful discharges were 9 for the quarter. Secure treatment. This is our treatment that we facilitate within the jail, and we serve 24 people within the quarter. We averaged 26 days. So if we had one person that was sanctioned for, you know, not complying with the conditions of their supervision, we put them into treatment. Then they serve roughly 26 days in the secure treatment pod, where they're getting a dosage of 4 hours of cognitive behavioral therapy per day. And that has been very successful so far. We've had a range of 4 days to 44 days within this last quarter of people served in the jail secure treatment. The ADIS is a fairly new program. We've been operating that for roughly a year now. In the last quarter, we served 62 folks, and those are folks that have new DUIIs, whether it's diversion or whether it's conviction, and our ADIS is currently serving those folks for the county. And they're not necessarily on formal supervision. They may be on bench probation, typically speaking. We are going to deploy a new program with the courts. I've been in correspondence with presiding Judge Baker, and she has requested that we formally supervise people that have 3 DUIs but fall outside that 10-year gap. So typically, if you have 3 DUIs within 10 years, then you get a felony charge. Well, sometimes if they get outside of that 10 years, and we really don't have a hammer on them. But now that we've agreed to take on some of those folks for formal supervision, we may have a little bit more teeth and accountability in their process. So we're willing to do that. We're going to start that program July 1st. Transitional housing, we've served 60 offender beds within the last quarter, 20 in March, 21 in April, and 19 in May. And these are folks that have would otherwise be out there homeless without supervision. A lot of them would go on abscond because they don't have their basic needs met, housing, clothing, employment searches, and support in that way. So one of the exciting things that we've just started as of yesterday, actually, is we have a live-in manager into the Ferguson house now, and so they're going to help facilitate on-site accountability and group therapy and things of that nature. Yeah. So we worked out a compensation plan for that particular manager, and it's been a good partnership so far. So.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that is under the surface with the folks that you work with is that if you're not constantly holding them accountable, either actively putting a hand on their shoulder or sitting face to face with them, you just see them periodically, you're talking on the phone, that's nothing.
Right.
You have to have that face to face or the hand. How's it going? What's going on? Ooh, you're looking a little rough. What's happening? That kind of a thing. And, I mean, these kinds of numbers are impressive on the basis of the average numbers, say there's 85 individuals that the average parole officer has. You've got to be innovative about how you're going to work with them, because that's a tremendous amount of time necessary to hold them accountable. But that's the goal, to hold them accountable, not just wait until they screw up again and bust them and do whatever with them. To hold them accountable, to try to stop that cycle of behavior, and that's the struggle. It's a whole lot easier to talk about it, right? Or to tell you how you ought to do it, rather than actually out there doing it and working with the people that are doing it. So.
Yeah, and that's our aim. One of the things that struck me in these numbers here is we had 298 arrests, and that's one contact that's negative in nature. You know, they're going to jail. But if you look at the, if you break that down, you add up all the other contacts, you know, there's only a very small amount of contacts that we have that were putting handcuffs on them and taking them to jail. Everything else is building rapport, motivational interviewing, getting them to understand that, hey, they can do this and be crime-free and start making thinking changes which will later change their behavior. So that's an important thing to recognize as well. I just had three last things that I wanted to kind of brag about our department. We had an Interstate Compact audit does this audit every year. This is the second consecutive year that we got the best marks in the state. Mm-hmm. We had the Interstate Compact executive director come and tour our facility last month. I had lunch with him. He ended up telling me how much he appreciated our county for being in compliance with all the rules. They're very complex rules. We have folks that are namely Michael Gunther, who's a PO. He's going to be recognized at the next OACCD meeting, as far as I know, and also has demonstrated just a passion for Interstate Compact and making sure the people that come to and from our state, specifically Josephine County, are held accountable. So that's very, very good award that we got. Also, a billing system that two of our managers had been working on for quite some time now. It's finally working, and we haven't had too many hiccups, but we got a check for roughly $9,000 this last month, and that has exceeded our expectations because we only budgeted, I think, $80,000 for the biennium, and that's going to exceed it by probably double at least. We have a pretrial summit. We're looking at potentially implementing pretrial within Josephine County, which will help, I think, all of the community partners if it happens in terms of failure to appear. And Yamhill County has implemented this. That's up in McMinnville. They have seen a reduction in their failure to appear to their court from 20%. Now they're down to like 3%, which is really, really good.
It's a huge inefficiency when people mm-hmm. don't show up for the work week,
right,
and moving it out to another time, having a public defender there or the DA mm-hmm. prepared for a case, and then they don't show.
Right. Yeah, and then a bench warrant's issued, yeah, then they get picked up on some other, and then they start the whole process over
yeah.
again. So it's a waste of taxpayer money. We're going to try to implement this pretrial sooner than later. So we got to get all the community partners on board, but we're going to a summit up in McMinnville. Actually, I'm leaving today to go.
I have heard good things about that.
Yeah, so hopefully that'll be something that we implement soon. Mm-hmm. Any questions for me?
No. Congratulations on your good work, though.
Oh, well, thanks. I typically don't report the negative stuff. No.
No, I think you're doing a great job. Is there anything we need to be in this off season making sure that, I think we should be an example regionally for the implementation of the reinvestment dollars mm-hmm. and how to get, we can't just be the only ones in the region being successful with this program. Might be a little challenging to reach out and stuff, but you've got great relations with our neighboring counties to make sure that everybody's taking full advantage of these reinvestment dollars, because if they're not providing reasonable outcomes for the state legislature, then they don't have a reason to keep that funding stream in the queue, and then we are going to be negatively impacted by losing those dollars, which I think have been really valuable for reducing recidivism and other things. I'm impressed by this local employment mm-hmm. number. 43% is pretty impressive, and I think there's a number of different things. The transitional housing is probably a huge element of that, and as that program gets well underway and established with in-house kind of supervision and management, are there specific companies within Josephine County that are very, they're just ripe for people of that kind of?
Yeah, we have.
There's the name, probably the go-to people in the mm-hmm. community that are just on a routine basis picking up people that are in a challenging situation and needing to get back into the employment world. It's that employer that's willing to take that little bit of an added risk with an employee
has a huge effect on people's lives.
Yeah. Yeah, and we screen a lot of the folks before we make those referrals, you know, to different employee agencies. And we have a list. We call it the felon-friendly list for employers that are willing to take on that level of risk that you're referring to. We do screen them, and we make sure that, you know, if they have a ID theft or they have a tendency to, you know, pocket money and steal, we don't want them working at a cash in, as a cashier.
Yep.
You know, or, you know, that's basic, obvious, common sense
sure.
type of screening. But, you know, you'd be surprised how many people try to get back into those types of roles. You know, we had a neglect case just recently who wanted to go back and do foster care. It's like, no, you can't do that. So, you know, we end up screening those things out.
Yeah.
But a lot of the folks that you see that are representing the 43%, I mean, they've gone through rehab. They've gone through cognitive behavioral therapy. The POs are formulating case plans that are appropriate, and we're making sure that they're not going to hurt anybody under our watch as best we can.
That's true.
So,
yeah, as best you can.
Good.
Great.
Glad to hear it.
Thank you.
Okay. Finance report. We have Arthur.
Good morning.
You know, I could almost say what you're doing with your spare time, but I know you have none. Budget season may be over for some, but not for you.
No, that's part of what I was going to mention, is that as far as priorities, I have two things for today, but I am going to bring back the supplemental budget. Just a little bit of a hiccup, a little bit of a speed bump, not too bad. So instead of being available for today or tomorrow, it'll be next week. Working on finance policies, that is right after the supplemental. They will get there, no problem.
JJ and I are HR working on extensions for not, you know, don't worry about it. You'll be paid when we have them. I'm just kidding.
I've got to take him out to coffee again and just it's important. It's very important.
I was hoping we could do it as clean on July 1st. So
yeah. But it'll get there.
Great.
Trust funds, timesheets, grant accountant. I'm two more interviews today for the grant accountant, and then that'll be everybody.
Office reconfiguration, you guess.
That's next week.
Yeah.
So finally, after 2 years, I think we were scheduled to get new carpet 2 years ago, but they're getting it in next. That'll be the 10th of June.
Mm.
Friday, the 10th of June. So our office will be closed. We'll actually shut down because they have to pull everything out, you know, put in the new car, put everything back. IT is going to come in and pack up all the computer equipment to make sure that building maintenance doesn't. And so it'll be a little bit. So next Friday, the 10th, finance office will be closed. We'll send out a notice on that too. So several things going on. So the main thing, I've got two requests here. The first one is the, I think on the list, is economic development for the Siskiyou Bluegrass Festival. This is a repeat of last year's request. Last year we gave them $5,000 to the Ivy Chamber of Commerce for the Siskiyou Bluegrass Festival. So they are repeating that request this year also.
The premise for the $5,000 was to increase advertising so that they had more of a reach outside the area, if I remember correctly. I don't know that their attendance really was in line with their expectations.
Yeah.
I would say that there weren't any more people. I think I've been going for about the last 10, 12 years, however long I've been doing it. It wasn't stellar. It was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure, you know, it wasn't supposed to be it was supposed to take a couple of years, but it's not an indefinite allocation under my understanding. It's kind of to get the ball rolling so that the revenue from the increased attendance would pay for...
Would pick it up.
Yeah. And so I think we just need to keep that in the back of our minds. That
do they have other advertisers? That's the question this year. I mean, did that help to stimulate other advertising, or are we the only one? What did they say?
Yeah, that's another thing is match money. Mm-hmm. Who else is putting in? Because I don't... I mean, just the back of the envelope math on the number of people who are paying to get in. And some people are with the bands, you know, their families or whatever, the group. So the audience isn't all paying to get in there. Are they making $5,000? You know, they may not even be making $5,000. Right. So it may be cost-benefit. I mean, it's a great thing, and I love it. I want to go on. I want to continue.
Yeah.
But at some point, we have to face the fiscal reality that if we're contributing $5,000 and you're not making $5,000, it's a lost leader and you're not making progress. You have to be making incremental 25-30% increase in your attendance to get to that point where I start.
Well, I wouldn't have any problem of tying something together with, we'd like to have some reports back.
Okay.
Of what this is, what are they actually doing? How's this benefiting?
Did he mention a few
statistics here, but I think the what I'm getting from the board is that we really want to see some more specific information.
Right.
Number of advertisers, other contributors, maybe a scale of attendance mm-hmm. over time to mm-hmm. see increases on the attendance side of things. So that's not in here in a very you know, in the format that would make it easier to find. He talked about continued advertising, increasing advertising, largest fundraiser for the chamber and those kinds of things. But from what I'm hearing, it sounds like we want a little more specific.
So if it was a fundraiser for the chamber and we provided mm-hmm. funding last year, did it increase their revenues
right.
last year?
Correct, yes.
And what is the projection for this year? I think we need to have a little more of a report as to the effectiveness of what we contributed last year before we do it again this year.
We want them to be successful and mm-hmm. on a trajectory mm-hmm. that's going to, because they need to understand that I don't think that this allocation, and it might be something different, you know. Mm-hmm. I'd rather spend the $5,000 that we're contributing on something that's going to return on our investment as opposed mm-hmm. to,
well, and that was the idea last year, is, you know, advertise, promote it, get increased attendance, and, you know, does the report show that they did that before we give them another one?
Well, they need to have a multi-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's at other bluegrass festivals would be a logical place for me to right. say, you know, this, if you want to go to one in August, this is the one to go to. And they kind of run where people mm-hmm. go to different ones. I know there's the one over in Enterprise or over in Eastern Oregon. They're all over the place. But, yeah, anyway, I don't want to micromanage
it. The thing that causes a big hiccup in this whole process is when they have to shut down
yeah.
for the fire. And then that causes a big damage, and that's a multi-year effect before they can start regaining things, too. But,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think it would be good to have some feedback from them as to what are the specific...
Yeah.
Who's advertising?
Yeah, sure.
Who else is putting money into it?
Yeah, what numbers. They should have that. For their own record.
Brian's got all that down for sure.
Okay. So you get some additional info for us? Thank you. Okay. Title III extension.
Second thing would be Title III. This is Jenny Hall, Emergency Management, working on the Community Wildfire Protection Plan, wants to continue that project with the change in vendors. We need to...
I don't know if we want to.
She has
no choice.
Yeah.
But she had a choice to just let the other one go as it is and probably do that. But she sees the need to improve it, especially integrating the Healthy Forest Restoration Act stuff. And you know, she's got so much time and energy into this thing, you can't really drop it at this
mm-hmm.
point. She's doing interviews and reviewing, those are this Friday things that do on the RFP for the Community Wildfire Protection. And honestly, there's three people that are responding. First, we didn't think there really was anybody, and so she's going to do okay, mm-hmm. I think, come out of there with somebody we want to carry this over the mm-hmm. finish line. So that's really encouraging for me, because I don't want Jenny to be stressing over doing this. That's not her job.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else needs to do this. Even though she could, that's not why we hired her.
but to coordinate it is appropriate. And that's what this
fund is. Grant administrator, kind of the person, the project manager.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, reallocating existing funds or additional funds for an existing program is fine.
Also, the placeholder for the amount here, $100,000, I don't know that we have an expectation of using that, but you can only allocate these Title III funds within pre-approved programs. This is a pre-approved program, and if there's money left over at the end of the day, it will just go to the other one, which is probably
Firewise community program
for fuels reduction. So it won't be wasted. It's not lost. If we don't use it all, that would be great.
Yeah, and
there's plenty.
There's plenty of Firewise areas that need that.
But
help.
It can only be used for like these three programs, mm-hmm. and otherwise we send it back to the feds.
So we're going to allocate 100% to these three. Of course, the third one, search and rescue events on federal property, is pretty minimal. I think I budget $10,000 a year, and we don't even use that much.
We used to do $50,000, and the time that I've been here, I think we've only assessed like $5,000 in search and rescue costs in 5 years. Mm-hmm. Not going to be a big one.
Okay.
So, for this one, I will put in your signature file.
Into the signature file.
And the two or three things I mentioned already, the supplemental budgets and so on, policies, timesheets, grants, accounting. So unless there's questions, that's what I brought.
Any questions, anybody?
No.
Thank you.
We're continuing, I guess, to work on the Demick campus.
Correct.
Mark Isley is providing additional guidance, and I think we're developing a proposal for developer to respond to. We're updating that draft and really getting into robust conversations. We had a meeting with the city officials talking about height restrictions and, you know, the limiting factors out front about what we need to take care of. And so a developer doesn't come, well, I'd love to be here, but you got a 50-foot height restriction and I can't afford to build this, do this development without a 60-foot,
How high is the tower?
I believe it was in excess of the height restriction.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure.
I'm thinking it must have been because it was four stories.
Yeah, it wasn't short. But, you know, that would be something. And the city's talked about, you know, that's fine. Vacating 8th Street sounded like Mark came up with that as a proposal that makes that whole other campus more contiguous. That's a genius. I thought about that. But 8th Street, underneath it, has a water main. Even if you vacate it, you can't build over it the water main. So those kinds of
things. But you can put a driveway and a parking lot.
You could.
Yes.
So we're having those conversations up front and going through the trade, the process of, like, what would a developer want to do here? And what are those restrictions? Looking at the 8th Street building is really not anywhere as valuable as we thought. So going through the process of remediating and all of that is very key. Mm-hmm. To somebody saying coming in, it's $250,000 to take down. Well, it isn't that if you remediate, $200,000 worth of the asbestos and everything and it can all go, to a non-certified landfill. That's huge deals to get those things done. Selling that generator up there, having the board liquidate that kind of thing. You don't need it,
Generator?
It's huge. It's not. Not what the airport, I guess.
No, but I'm thinking about
Public Works might need one. They've got one.
Or fairgrounds.
Something.
I don't think they have one at fairgrounds.
We will run through every possible.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. The size of it and at the fairgrounds, particularly if that's an emergency
location
for livestock and animals, that might be.
Yeah.
The size of it would generate a lot of power for the fairgrounds. So that's. That would be a good spot, I think. So, okay.
Stuff like that.
It's just like the $25 million you're going to get for that property, you're going to sell it, or whatever. The old Ranger on their portrait, the top bid so far, the place I've heard is like $350,000 for that property.
15.
Yeah. And so it's not like, oh, man, that's $5 million by that property. No.
No, that's why selling it really isn't it's a wash for us to sell it. If we owe, you know, money for that loan on remediating the we basically could walk away from it unless we facilitate being a partner and doing something with it. You know, where there's a revenue stream forever on it. That's the partnership. That's the key. But we have to do a lot of the work. You can't just say, oh, well, pay us a check for a property. But I can go and find any piece of property. I don't have to do that. So we got to do the work. Which Arthur and Mark are
doing. Are doing.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. You've got it done.
Okay. Number four, board business. I made an addition, if you don't mind, here to the agenda. Mr. Snook is here. I talked to him yesterday, and as you know, we put a ban on fireworks displays in unprotected areas, and they had a permit in process before we did that, but it wasn't all finalized. So, Mr. Snook, would you like to come up and explain the situation with what you have? And he is a licensed pyrotechnician, and there was a display he was working on that is actually across the street from a fire station, but city one side and county the other. So he'll give you his information here and see what the board. I told him I couldn't take any action because the board had issued the restriction. Mr. Smith.
From the county's excellent website, I downloaded this map off the GIS. I have circled fireworks area, fallout area, Redwood School, Redwood Fire Department, City Fire Department, the James Lowe property where the wedding will take place, and the adjacent field. This is all
James
in the...
James Lowe? The answer's no.
He'll come in with his...
Yeah.
Gave me that thing.
I was running out of town the other day, and it was like 8:30, 9 o'clock, and he's busting his rear end out there.
It's what he does.
What are you doing, James? Well, he's always doing that. But he's like, we got a wedding in like a month or something like that, 2 months.
So we started the process on the application on that with the State Fire Marshal's Office back in March. And it kind of goes on and on and on. I've done fireworks shows now for the 4th of July here in Boat Neck and other various things for 25 years. It gets more and more difficult every year.
Yeah.
That's why this is my last year. My daughter wants to do it, so good for her. So in this thing, we have to get it approved by the sheriff, and we have to get it approved by the local fire chief.
Right.
Of course.
Not a fire chief, that's us.
And that is you, right? Not knowing that that's the way it worked, I had Rural Metro sign off on it, it went up, everything was good, and then someone said, oh, wait, that's not them. So they called me down, or called down to me, and said, you need to have the commissioner sign off on this. But don't go until after the 31st, because I don't think they know yet. So, in waiting for that, on the 27th, you put out your thing saying no fireworks shows. The show takes place just outside the city limits in the green zone. That means it's irrigated farmland. It's below the ditches. ODFW recognizes that. I've done work in these zones before, doing fire mitigation work and tear downs. The corner of Allen Creek and West Harbeck, that old burn-up house that was there. I took that down all summer long. Directly across the street is one of the uppity-ups at ODF here in the local stations. You know, I don't like seeing you out there doing it. There's nothing we can do about it. And personally, I do like you seeing out there because I don't have to stare that half-burn-up place anymore. So that's where we are with that. Do you have any questions on that?
Okay. For me, I think I know this area really, really well. And it makes a lot of sense, I think, from what you were talking about, the fuels potential, the fallout area. It's all irrigated, not sub-irrigated.
Right.
Flood irrigated. The irrigation line runs right along the road right there. And even when you don't want to flood irrigate, it does, because there's just so much water that's going through that irrigation canal. It wasn't really built to just convey the water. One of the most moist sections, I think, we have in the county. The problem is that it gives the impression for other people that The city and county lines are so confusing out there. I don't think anybody hardly knows. Like, I didn't know that that pasture is owned by District 7 as a potential next development site.
Right.
I don't even remember who owns it, but there's cows out there. And, you know, it's really weird to have a fire station, which seems like it's out in the county, but it isn't. It's in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know that it's one of those places where it's going to be so obvious that it's in the county as a violation, that there's going to be that confusion. That would be the biggest thing for me, is that you issued this press release, Commissioner Walker did, on behalf of the board, to say no fireworks displays out in unprotected areas. But there's a fire station right across the street.
Right.
Everybody's going to assume that that firehouse is the protection agency for this area. Why wouldn't it be? It's across the street.
And actually, they would respond, even though it's not in the city.
Sure.
If there was a dangerous situation because of the cooperative agreement.
Yeah. So I don't have any objection to this one.
Yes.
I don't have any objections either on the basis of who is doing it. I mean, I'm talking about who you, the certified pyrotechnic individual with all of the preventative work that's been done, and I don't have any problems with it.
And the fire station across the street.
Yeah, I mean, it's right there.
And you think you started this application process before we put in our...
I have a date stamped from the fire marshal that proves this well before your declaration there.
Okay.
Would you provoke your phone number on this?
Problem.
And
about that last night.
So if the board is concurs, we can sign it today.
Mm-hmm.
And
the other element is that there is even if one is adjacent to Fire Protection District Service, but if they weren't willing, saying, no, I don't want to have to be responsible for that, but they've already signed off on this, thinking they were responsible for it, that's another huge factor.
Yeah.
So you have the form there. You can just pass it. Or do we just need one signature?
I believe so. Just sign the chair, county commission chair, and it's in the fire authority in the upper left-hand corner.
The chair, I'll make
fire authority.
To approve this recommendation or this application for a something to copy. Approve this application for limited 1.4G fireworks display permit.
And I will happily second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Okay. Roll call.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes.
Commissioner Heck?
Yes.
Commissioner Walker?
Yes. Motion carries.
I appreciate your cooperation.
My motion included to delegate Commissioner Walker on behalf of the board to sign. Didn't say that. You did.
It's okay.
Oh, wrong sign.
And I need a copy of that slide for that.
Yeah, I'm filling it in right now.
Yeah, on this thing, it doesn't make a difference who is the application for. This is something that is applied for, planned for, prevented for. I mean, everything has been done. It's not just some random selection.
Yeah.
I'd have no problem telling James, sorry.
Yeah.
If it didn't line up. I told him no before on road things that he thought was on RVF. Just said, no, I can't agree with that, Mr. Long.
Yeah, his boy is getting married on the 2nd. Marrying Gary Peterson's granddaughter.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Keeping the family.
Yeah, and he's been accepted into Navy SEAL school along with my boy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on that. That's not easily done to be even accepted.
That now comes a real
not rumor. That's right.
Okay.
Let me give you this page. I'll send a copy with that, because that other page won't make much sense without that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The good news is you pass the bad news is you pass the test.
Right, exactly.
Well, I think this is a clear example of where, you know, when you have an issue and you're trying to protect the public, not one size fits all.
Right, and that's what we have to really watch, is that we
we're becoming an ant society, where everyone's just another ant in the hill. We pass laws and we don't look at how they affect people. Mm-hmm. You're trying to take care of this problem here, but you affect all mm-hmm. of this here.
Yeah. Well, and you can't foresee everything.
You can't.
That's one of those things that's difficult to manage for.
Yeah.
Because you can't see it all.
Well, if we weren't given the authority to make discretionary decisions, then we'd just be governed by monkeys or something.
Yep.
I don't want to go there. Okay. So,
thank you.
I filled that box out. Is that how you needed it?
Yeah.
Well, if they say they need something else filled out,
bring it back.
Okay.
That's exactly what we're bringing it.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks
well,
for
we're
your
filled
time.
Out for you. You're welcome.
Thank you for your first assistance. And I shall.
Thank you.
Go out and mow tall grass some more.
No. Yeah, tomorrow's the day.
Yeah.
I call it elephant grass. It got so tall in some places.
I've mowed 8 foot tall grass.
Take care. Okay, anything else matters from commissioners?
I don't
know. Do you have anything?
Sure. Yes. I'm sad to report that Mr. Rice, Building and Safety Director, has tendered his resignation. That one's not going to be fun at all. In fact,
that's going to be a difficult one to
hiring people has been really challenging. And it would be fine if he was just a director, but he's actually also a certified inspector.
And that's part of the problem.
And so who are you going to find out there who's a certified inspector who also wants to be a manager of the department?
He's not old enough to retire. Is he taking another position?
I'm not sure.
He didn't say. Okay.
I'm not sure.
And that's as of June 30th?
Yes.
Okay, so I presume as liaison you are going to be talking to HR really quickly?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It would be great to have the board's approval. I don't see a need for a change in the job description or anything like that. But I would like to advertise as soon as possible, like tomorrow.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
And get that moving forward. Also, I'd like to see if he has a recommendation like we have for planning. Mr. Converse is a potential interim department mm-hmm. manager. Mm-hmm. I think we need somebody to at least...
So there's only two people in that department, isn't there?
Well, there's two inspectors.
Two inspectors.
Probably about four or five people
okay.
in that department.
Well, and that's part of the problem, though, too, with he wears five different hats and that kind of a thing. And that's
It's going to be really challenging. The only thing that I could think about in less than 24 hours notice, and I've been thinking about it for a while, but I never expected Mr. Rice to leave this position so soon. He just implemented e-permitting. And
yes,
so
May 23rd.
That's hopefully going well, but mm-hmm. we'll see. IT was really involved in putting that together, so they'll be helpful in keeping it running. But in some counties, the building and safety inspecting is under planning, and that would be the only consideration. However, we just got a new planning community development director. I don't know that it's appropriate to put one more thing on her plate. She may say,
shall I talk to her and see if that's anything that she has done
I think
before?
We should explore that. You know, it's just
because maybe she has had that responsibility
it
before.
It might be easier to hire another inspector who's, you know, it's a fairly independent office. I mean, the mm-hmm. things just, applications come in, especially with e-permitting, you go out and inspect. It's not, the managerial responsibilities that Robert and I have talked about. He has taken on of his own fruition to try to use the state president of the Building Inspectors Association. He just got back from the International Code Council meeting. And those are things, you know, that he has, because of his in-depth knowledge on the code and ways it's implemented on the ground and ways it can be improved. Do we have to have that in our, probably not. It's great to have it, mm-hmm. especially with the cross-laminate technologies that are coming on for tall wood buildings. We don't build a lot of tall buildings here. But he was instrumental in some of that work as well. So we just might miss out on those things if we just... I'd like to explore that with you know, planning director, or at least have that conversation with Robert and say, this is the time to explore different options of management.
Mm-hmm.
So...
That's bad.
It is. It really is. We're getting down to one manager that I didn't since I've been here. Yours was, you know, position increase and change, but Mr. Brandis is the only one that still remains.
And he was born and raised here, so maybe he won't leave.
There's no relationship between all these people, or you were the liaison with?
No, we've just had that much turnover. So.
Well, and that's really not uncommon. You know, it's just that we're such
that's
a small...
For us.
Well, it's such a small county.
With people,
yeah.
Most managers having... I think it's just... Some of it is the added stress level of the you know, reduction in budget, which everybody has... has seen. You know, I don't
well, that's why we lost our. That's how we lost our clerk.
Hasn't felt
that's
it.
Why we lost our clerk.
So
and a couple of others.
But yeah. I can't speak for Robert as to why he
yeah.
this resignation, but at least he gave us 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, yeah. As I would expect him to have done.
Well, let me talk to. I'm going to meet with planning director today.
Yeah.
And I will just see if that's been anything that she has ever had anything to do with. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we probably have to make some adjustments in the department and adjustments in a lot of things. But, like you say, to now is the time. So before you put the advertisement out, let's...
I'll put it out because we can always
hang out. Yeah, we can cancel it.
But I can't, you know, I can't buy myself the next couple of days or a week to explore this. Take your time because we can always say no.
All right.
And I'm certainly, and I'm not insinuating that she would do this either, but I certainly would not want Julie to feel any incumbency that this is what she is now going to have to absorb.
No. And I don't think she would take it that way either. Having spent some time with her, I don't think she would take it that way either.
I don't really see any other place that makes sense. Some small counties have everything under like a public works administrator.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've tried those super programs in the past, they are not effective. Something always loses during them. The challenges the public works are going to be facing with that $2 million, I mean, that can't continue. They're going to be in, they are in their own crisis right now.
Yes, and it's looming.
To do a $2 million reduction in their operation, we've got 52, I think, employees. You know, that takes them down to, I don't know, probably 30 on a good day. And if we're doing 25% of our chip seal program, that's right now. That's not in the future. We need to do 50 miles every year.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be doing like 5 or 10,
mm-hmm.
which is 10%. You know, it doesn't mean very many years, and stuff's going to start. We're going to have to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Say it's going to be gravel or not.
In fact, maybe sooner rather than later.
Probably.
Decide which roads those will be and just go that way.
Yep.
Okay, any other liaison update?
That's the big one.
Yeah, thanks.
That's the big one? Okay, nothing else? Any other miscellaneous items?
No.
Okay. All right. That being said, it is 10:23, and we are adjourned.